This is Money Moves on VSiN, the sports betting network.
What's going on, everybody? Happy Tuesday as we welcome you into Money Moves on VSiN, the sports betting network. Sirius XM, Channel 158, Stormy Bonantoni with you, live in downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino, home of the world's largest sports book, which, by the way, it is a busy morning out here, apparently, for owner and CEO of Circa Resort and Casino, Derek Stevens, who is making the rounds back here at the sportsbook, getting set for what will be a busy NFL season. Circa Survivor, the Circa Million contest, proxies getting all set up. So if you haven't already checked out the info for those contests, you know you need to. We are hoping to be doing a tandem pair today with Mark Melusis out in NYC, having a little technical difficulty. So hopefully he joins with us here in a moment or two. Very familiar voice, obviously, already here at VSiN, but it's going to be our first time working together. And I feel kind of bad, like maybe our bosses are out to get us to an extent, because not only is it our first day working together here in what is the official start of the dog days of summer, where we've got the NBA Finals, NHL Stanley Cup, all of that over with. Only one more big PGA Tour event going on. It's all baseball and WNBA and futures talk from here on out over the next couple of months. And then to add insult to injury, a day in which a New York sports media man joins the show after the Yankees and Mets lost yesterday. So hopefully he's in a positive mindset. We'll see as we get to it here in just a little bit. Also coming up on the show with us in about 30 minutes, Terrell Furman, Fantasy Pros betting analyst. He's going to help us break down tonight's four-game slate in the W. Justin Perry as well coming up in hour two, fantasy writer for PitcherList.com. I know we're used to talking to him in college basketball and NBA for shot quality, but doing a lot of great work in Major League Baseball as well, which yesterday ended up being a pretty good baseball day for the show. Got to give a little credit where credit is due to our guy Keith Irizarry, as well as Josh Applebaum yesterday. I won my one bet too, but I didn't go 5-1 like Keith with a plus 375 home run hit with Fernando Tatis there for him. Josh Applebaum also went 3-0 with his picks. So let's see if we can keep the positive vibes rolling today, as we should finally set the table for what we have on deck over the course of the next 2 hours here on Money Moves. Our wonderful producer, Brian Ortega, hard at work behind the glass today. So if you would, my friend, let's run it down. You know what time it is.
It's time for the top headlines and topics of the day. This is The Rundown.
I say, you know what time it is. I feel like I went full Flavor Flav on that one. For those of you who don't know what I mean by that, yeah, come on. Anyways, we have a lot of Major League Baseball on deck today. Full slate, 15 games, all 30 teams in action. So lots of options to get involved in the betting board. Some good pitchers on the hill today, including AL Cy Young favorite Tarek Skubal going for Detroit against the A's, a big favorite there, and the market moving in their favor as well. I think minus 285 out to now as high as minus 330 against the A's, who did, by the way, officially break ground here in Vegas on the new stadium, even though that deal's not fully done. Funny how all of that works. Garrett Crochet, though, Carlos Rodon, Spencer Strider, lots of good arms on the hill today, so will be fun to break down that at length. A couple bets that I do already have in pocket, and some I'm contemplating. So hopefully Mark can give me a little bit of his thoughts there as well. Number two in our top three items coming up on deck today for Money Moves, we're talking quarterbacks. We're going to break down some of the week one starter markets, and in honor of the Netflix quarterback series officially returning, although I know it's not starting until July 8th, but we're looking for news here, people. We're going to answer the biggest questions surrounding the stars of this year's series. So looking back at last year for Joe Burrow, Jared Goff, Kirk Cousins, as well, of course, some potential individual props, team bets that might be available there as well. I am one of the believers in the Bengals, particularly in the early season this year. I know year after year we have been giving them flack, rightfully so, for the way that they've started seasons. But I like how Zach Taylor said he's actually going to start some of his starters in the preseason. I think that could be impactful for them early in the year, which is important. They can't dig themselves in these holes year after year. So excited to talk about Burrow and that whole crew. And then to kick us off here, off the top, an eventful NBA offseason is officially underway. And because, again, this is my first day working with Mark, our audience hasn't heard a lot of his opinions on the Thunder's title or the KD trade. So we'll hit on all of that. Very excited as well to get his thoughts on the Knicks head coaching search. We're also, of course, waiting on the draft. The first round set to begin tomorrow night out at Barclays Center in Brooklyn. But let's start with the most new news, shall we? Any word on Mark?
Hello?
Are we getting closer? Mark, I hear you. Do you hear me?
I hear you.
Yes. Look at us go. How are you?
I'm good, Stormy.
Man.
How are you?
Good.
Are
so
you?
Great.
Good to see you. Thanks for having me.
So great to be with you today. And you missed all of the small talk, but I wanted to check in on you, though. How are you feeling that you have to join me day one in the dog days of summer after a day in New York where baseball was not going well? And that's all we have to talk about now.
Plus, it's like 104 degrees in New York
out
City
there?
Today. It is like, oh, it's steamy. It's like record highs in New York today. So, yeah, I mean, the Yankees out in Cincinnati last night, once again, leaving a small village on the base pass. Terrible with runners in scoring position. Downturn when you look at Anthony Volpe. And, you know, the Mets last night got shut down by Schwellenbach and the Atlanta Braves. He had one opportunity in that eighth inning. Men on first and third, Soto up, 3-2 pitch. And Lee strikes him out with the slider down and away. So, yeah, not exactly ideal right now when you look at it, but it's as stormy as you know. It is a long baseball season, but it's not like the Yankees and the Mets are playing some of their best baseball right now toward the middle tail end of the month of June.
Well, New York fans are not one to overreact. What are we talking
about? No, we take everything in stride. We take everything in stride, no doubt about it.
It'll be good. We'll get into more of that baseball talk a little bit later on in the show, but I do want to kick things off still in the Northeast, but over in Boston, where we did have a consequential trade last night in the NBA, the Celtics sending Drew Holiday to Portland for Anthony Simons and two second round draft picks. Simons joins Boston on the expiring contract. Holiday was owed roughly $72 million. I don't know, over the next 2 years, I don't know if people really realize as the fourth best player or so on that team, he was making $30 million a year here. So the deal saves Boston $40 million in the luxury tax payments next season. And we were all asking ourselves, right after the Jason Tatum injury, what is it going to look like for the Celtics moving forward? He's going to be unavailable all of next year's regular season, likely into at least the start of the postseason as well. So were they going to sit pat or be active? I think most people thought they would be active, and that began last night.
Yeah, it did. And I don't necessarily understand the trade from a Portland perspective. Obviously, they don't want to pay Simons, right, going into a kind of a walk year. From a Celtics standpoint, they're going to take a wait-and-see approach. I think they're going to punt on the air. I think Porzingis is going to go as well this offseason, Stormy. It's going to be a year in which, you know, and we'll see exactly how bad it gets. I mean, Jaylen Brown, new ownership up there in Boston. They're spending a lot of money. They coming off the championship, and then you mentioned the Tatum Achilles injury during that Knicks series, so he's going to be done for the season. I get it from a Boston perspective because I think you saw some age to Drew Holiday. Love him as a player, right? Wonderful defensive player. Two-time NBA champ, one time with Milwaukee, one time with the Boston Celtics. And he's a guy that at times during that Knicks series I think was the best defender on Jalen Brunson if you want to go mano-a-mano matchup. But the Celtics are in a different position now. So, you know, they have obviously their – you know, the same leadership outside of the ownership that is going to be moving forward here. But I think when you're looking at next basketball season, I think it's going to be they're going to see what they have in Simons. They're going to look at, you know, see exactly what Jaylen Brown, he had knee surgery following this season. Tatum's going to be lost for the year. They're not going to be anywhere close to the team that they were 2 years ago when they were the NBA champ, Stormy. So I get it from their perspective because they didn't want to pay a guy with diminished returns. From a Portland perspective, I don't necessarily understand it. I don't know what they're exactly going to get from Drew Holiday from a Blazer team that kind of in a state of transition.
Yeah, and for the record, when you look at the odds board, no movement there. The Trailblazers were 500-1 to win an NBA title.
Yes.
That's still where they sit. Boston, meanwhile, 17-1. Same thing. No movement there, but I completely agree with your thought process there on this being kind of a throwaway year, which is crazy to think about. The fall from grace from just 2 years ago, as you referenced, winning an NBA title to now that core falling apart in the Tatum injury. Porzingis, to your earlier point about is he the next domino to fall here? here, just 1 year left on his deal. So that seems to be right. But the state of the Eastern Conference is so interesting right now with so many of these stars going down. The Tatum injury, Damian Lillard with the Bucks. Of course, what we saw with Tyrese Halliburton and the Pacers here in the NBA Finals. As you look at the odds for the NBA title next year, in the East, you have the what is this? So we start at the top. Sorry. OKC plus 225. The Rockets plus 750 with KD, which is crazy. The Cavs plus 850. Your Knicks plus 850 before things jump off at double digit odds there. I don't know how to play. Granted, I don't make bets on the NBA title winner this early in the summer anyways, but it seems wide open, at least in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, I think the East stinks. I mean, Stormy, to be honest with you, like I think it's not a particularly good conference. Like if you're Kevin Durant, I think, and I understand he didn't necessarily want to go down to Miami, or it was one of the teams, but Miami didn't really want to pay what the Rockets gave up. But I think if you're a team, if you're a player, you want to stay in the East. I think the Knicks, I think you have to go all the way back to 94 when Michael left to go play baseball for the expectations that are going to be on the Knicks in 2025, 2026. Boston's not particularly good. Philadelphia, never count on. They're Joel Embiid. I mean, who's counting on him necessarily to stay healthy? Yeah. Indiana's not going to have Halliburton. He's the head to the snake. The Knicks need to find themselves a head coach and need to improve that bench. But this is now, you thought expectations on the Knicks coming into this past year were huge. The expectations going into next season are going to be even greater because of the way that this Eastern Conference looks. I don't think anyone's necessarily afraid of the Cleveland Cavaliers with their smallish backcourt. And I think the Knicks are the team that plus 850 that I think most people are probably going to back.
And again, as you referenced, without a head coach. So I think that's a good place to end this conversation and pick up when we come back here on the program. When we return, continuing this NBA talk, but where do the Knicks look for a head coach now? Because I thought when they fired Tom Thibodeau, they had some sort of a plan in place. Maybe not with the way things are looking. Don't go anywhere. More Money Moves coming up after this. We're just getting started here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Looking for a more exciting way to bet? Time to check out XCUTA, that's spelled X-C-U-T-T-A, and it's the future of futures wagering. Combines the adrenaline of a live auction with the strategy of sports betting or fantasy picks, and it's easy to use and works for any sport. Over 1,000 teams, players, golfers, and drivers, XCUTA is adaptable to any sport, even horse racing, and it's free to sign up. You pick who you want to bid on, customize your own auction, set your winnings, and even invite your friends to play. You can create auctions for free today. XCUTA's got free auctions every day at 3, 6, and 9 p.m. Eastern. Send an email over to support@XCUTA, again, XCUTTA.com. Mention VSiN. They're going to give you a 3-month player promo code to get started. XCUTA is a sports Calcutta. Again, XCUTA.com. Check it out today. The future of futures wagering. Back here on Money Moves alongside Mark Malusis, Stormy Bonantoni with you, and nobody better to dive into the New York Knicks than somebody who is very big in New York sports media, Mark. So very grateful to have you on the program with us today to help get this going. We talked yesterday a lot on the show about the odds movement in the NBA futures realm and how the Rockets with KD had shot up, and the Knicks are right there among the favorites to win an NBA title next year. Obviously the Thunder favorites to repeat, but this is without having a head coach right now. Where are we at in the process for the Knicks after firing Tom Thibodeau following the Eastern Conference final?
Yeah, I think it's they're in a wait and see approach, trying to get information from everybody. Listen, it's if you have a contract somebody else, someplace else, and the Knicks come calling, it's to your benefit. Billy Donovan got a contract extension. Ime Udoka got a contract extension with the Houston Rockets. There's some that believe that Jason Kidd is still in play, even though the Knicks were denied permission to talk to him. You know, his lead assistant, Sean Sweeney, just left for the San Antonio Spurs, and his coaching staff is getting picked apart down there in Dallas, but he's still got 2 years left on his contract. And I know the owner of the Dallas Mavericks and James Dolan do have a relationship because they worked on the Sphere together out there where you are, Sonny, out there in Vegas, out there in Vegas, Stormy. So you look at this scenario is I don't know where they're going to go. I mean, they've interviewed Mike Brown. They interviewed Taylor Jenkins. If they wanted Johnny Bryant, a former Knick assistant who's on the Cavaliers staff for Kenny Atkinson right now, I think it would be a scenario where they would have hired Johnny Bryant. They want somebody that's going to step in that thinks that's going to take this team to the next level. From my understanding, I've been told that there's not going to be many changes on the coaching staff. That means Rick Brunson's probably still going to be the lead assistant, the father of Jalen Brunson. So whoever comes in is going to have to be A-OK with that. So you're not going to be able to turn that entire coaching staff over. So where do they go from here? I don't know. I mean, you hit upon it, Stormy, going into break. Did the Knicks have a plan? No. I mean, I think emotions came into play. I think the owner, James Dolan, came into play. I think a guy by the name of William Wesley, he goes by the name Worldwide West. NBA fans will know that. He and Tibbs didn't necessarily see eye to eye. The Knicks decided to make a change, you know, 48, 72 hours after they got eliminated by the Indiana Pacers in the Eastern Conference Finals. And did they have a game plan? Did you have like kind of an Excel spreadsheet saying, we want this, and this, right? We want a head coach that's got experience. We want to run this offensive system. We want to run this defensive system. No, there was no game plan whatsoever. So the problem you have with the Knicks, and it kind of went away for the last 5 years with Leon Rose and Tom Thibodeau, was that, you know, all this nonsense kind of went away, that James Dolan didn't necessarily get involved. When James Dolan gets involved, and he could do whatever he wants, he owns the team, doesn't necessarily lead to success for the New York Knicks. But do I like the starting five on the team? I do. Do I think they need to improve the bench? I'm curious to see exactly where they go for a head coach, because they're going to need a head coach that not only can get this team's ear, take them to a next level offensively, continue to have them go out there and play defense, but now with the pressure of championship or bust, because when they fired Tibbs, the statement from Leon Rose was, our singular focus is on winning an NBA championship for the fans. This is an organization that hasn't won a title since 1973, Stormy. So it's not exactly Title Town USA, but do they have a great game plan? No, I don't think so.
I know. I just keep thinking back to, you know, you're a summer out of signing Tibbs to the extension. You do things with the franchise that you haven't done for years and years and years under his tutelage, and then you move on to him without a plan. And I know there were a handful of people that said, you know, maybe Jay Wright was that guy, but he ended up informing the team that he didn't want to come out of retirement and he wasn't interested. And then, as you referenced, all of these other guys who currently have jobs, their teams denied them the opportunity to interview any of them. So it seems like such a cluster. Some of the names that you did mention, though, will put some odds to those names. Mike Brown is a plus 120 favorite to ultimately land the job. Taylor Jenkins plus 175. Johnny Bryant 4-1. Michael Malone, though, somebody that not the team directly, but people close to the team immediately came out and said they had no interest in at 5-1.
Yeah.
Why are they so anti-Michael Malone?
Because I think it's similar in nature to what Tibbs had and what Tom Thibodeau was as kind of a leader. Now, the difference is Tibbs didn't throw his players under the bus. Stormy, we saw it out there in Denver. Michael Malone has no issue throwing his players under the bus. So I don't think that's really where they're going. I'd love to tell you, sitting here on this Tuesday doing this show right here on VSiN with you, Stormy, that I have a great idea of where the Knicks are going to go. I really don't. I don't think it's going to be Johnny Bryant. I think if they wanted him, I think they would have hired him already, right? When he lost out on the job out there in Phoenix and he was a finalist out there. And from my understanding, Rick Brunson don't necessarily have a great rapport and great relationship. That's what I've been told. So I don't think it's necessarily going to be Johnny Bryant. Now, could it end up being Mike Brown? Could it end up being Taylor Jenkins? Here's the problem you have with Taylor Jenkins. Taylor Jenkins out in Memphis wasn't exactly a great offensive coach. They had issues. They brought in two assistants this past offseason to try and bring about a different offense for the Memphis Grizzlies. It didn't necessarily work, right? It was a former assistant for Budenholzer up there in Milwaukee. Are you going to bring in Mike Budenholzer? No. I mean, it was a disaster around Phoenix this past year. You know, we're a long way away from Giannis. So I still think the apple of their eye is probably Jason Kidd, who was a finalist with Tibbs when he was an assistant with the Los Angeles Lakers. I just think they're having a hard time getting him out of Dallas. But, you know, there are some insiders that still believe that's the guy that they want. You know, Jason Kidd, is he necessarily Red Auerbach? No. If you look at his career win percentage in the regular season, it's 52%, right? So is that a guy where it's championship or bust? The one thing that Kidd does have is he's got a lot of credit with Jalen Brunson. They have a good rapport, very, very good relationship. And I think Kidd's got the personality to be able to deal with all the personalities at Madison Square Garden. Can they get him? I don't know if they necessarily can get him. But if they can't, then I think it's probably going to end up being either Mike Brown or Taylor Jenkins.
Okay. Well, we'll keep tabs on the story, obviously, whenever the news does come down. The Knicks tied for third on the board to win an NBA title in 2025-26, plus 850. And the second shot in the conference, just 30 cents back of the Cleveland Cavaliers. Caps plus 260, Knicks plus 290. The team, meanwhile, that beat New York in the Eastern Conference Finals, the Indiana Pacers, come close but can't get it done against the OKC Thunder in Game 7 of the Finals. Obviously, we know Tyrese Haliburton goes down. He was playing so well, changes the complexion of the game for Indiana. Not to take anything away from OKC, but I'm sure all Pacers fans everywhere wonder what could have been. Indiana, at the initial opening mark of the odds board for the NBA title for next year, they were up there, like top two, three contenders. That number has fallen all the way to 80-1 with Tyrese Haliburton, who officially, as of yesterday, we have confirmed information, everyone's worst fear, what everyone knew that it was, in that being an Achilles on his right leg.
Yeah, it's terrible. I mean, and it was so deflating Sunday night, Stormy, watching that game and seeing him go down to that injury, because we saw with Jason Tatum, we saw with Dame Lillard, you know, we've seen these torn Achilles and you know it. You know, we saw with Kevin Durant when he was with Golden State, and people watch a slow-mo replay and see kind of the reaction in the right leg, and you know that it's that kind of an injury, and then you see the player's reaction. Listen, the Pacers are not the same without him. You know, it's credit to them that they actually led that game Sunday night at the half, Stormy, but, you know, it's a shame now when you look at Indiana now moving forward, where he's going to be out for the entirety of next season coming back from it. He's still young, and, you know, the Pacers have still got a really bright future, but this was an Indiana team that had an unbelievable epic run, and I would love to have seen that Game 7 if Tyrese Haliburton was in whole and healthy for the entirety of the game and giving you, you know, 25, 26 minutes, because I think it takes the pressure off of everybody else. But I can understand the drop in the marketplace, because who's back in Indiana now when you have the quote-unquote head of the snake not available for the Indiana Pacers moving forward? Because whatever you want to say about Tyrese Haliburton, star, superstar, we got into that kind of discourse and conversation through the NBA playoffs. He's a wonderful player that makes everyone around him better. And he is the guy that makes that Indiana Pacers team go, and with him out, with him not being available for them next season, they're no longer the same team.
Yeah, and I mean, the clutch moments that he had in every round of the postseason, and then
it was great.
And then he comes back from the calf injury in Game 6, and you're like, he's injured? What? He looked great, had such a strong start to Game 7. It's crushing. You can't help but get the visual of his face and the pain, not only physically, but for what he wasn't able to give his team in that critical Game 7. He posted on social media yesterday following what was surgery on that torn Achilles already. Man, don't know how to explain it other than shock. Words cannot express the pain of this letdown, but added, I would do it again and again after that to fight for this city and my brothers for the chance to do something special. The frustration, I can't even imagine for Tyrese Haliburton, but a fighter, a competitor, and you hate to see something like that happen to anyone, but especially somebody like him that was having such a special run, and in a Game 7 of all nights for it to go down. Okay, we have to take a quick timeout. When we come back, keeping the basketball talk rolling, but shifting gears from the NBA to the W, Terrell Furman is going to join us live coming up next, breaking down a four-game slate in the WNBA.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Alongside Mark Melusis, Stormy Bonantoni with you back here on Money Moves, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Time to get into a little WNBA talk with our good friend Terrell Furman, who joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line. Fantasy Pros, betting analyst, host of the Fast Break Bets Pod, the NBA and WNBA Sports Gambling Podcast Network. Okay, Terrell, we can slip in some NBA here too a little bit in the back. Of course, OKC winning the NBA Finals earlier this week. But for people that are shifting gears now, we're 2 days after the NBA season ending. They're already fiending for basketball. The W is the place to go right now. And there's been some good basketball, but there's also been some very volatile line movement. I feel like every day I'm looking at these spreads, they're all over the place. How good of a thing can that be at times for us as bettors if you get a good number? And also, how stressful can it be if you're not?
Yeah, it can be a lot. I think that the WNBA has always, and I mean, this has been, you know, since I've ever started betting the sport, it's always had really big line movement, and some of it can be trustworthy and some of it cannot be. A lot of it is injury news, and maybe somebody had an injury update before anybody else and the line moved accordingly. Other times it's just people with a lot of money that think they know the sport and they don't. Like, Indiana is one that the books love early, but they just don't compensate for how they may play on the road, the new style of offense, the tempo of pace. And so all of that may play into Indiana having a line like they did last night where it was -1.5, and then it immediately got bet to storm -3 because Indiana's not that good on the road, quite frankly.
Terrell, what about one line that we've seen, the Lynx? They're now 11-point favorites over the Washington Mystics down in Washington. What do you like in that game?
Yeah, so Nafisa Collier went through shoot-around earlier this morning, so that is more positive news into trending that she's going to be able to play. If she does play, that means that they'll be at full strength for the first time in a few weeks because Nafisa Collier will be back, and then Jessica Shepard's coming over from overseas commitment playing in Eurobasket, and she's one of the top rebounders in the league, and she's a 7-7 player coming off of the bench for them, which is really, really big in the W. So I have the Lynx. When they're full strength and they're good, they're a couple tiers above the Washington Mystics here. And Brittany Sykes is questionable to play here, so that's even more offensive concerns. I think that inside of the paint is going to be tough for Kiki and Shakira Austin going up against Fee and Alana Smith down there. So I think it's going to be Minnesota here. I like Minnesota. Of course, I liked it better when I got it at 7.5 than it being at 10.5, 11.5 right now. But I do think that Minnesota is going to be able to pull away from this one in the second half just because the Washington Mystics have just really, really struggled offensively. So if Sykes is officially out, maybe you want to look towards the Mystics team total under in this one and say the Minnesota defense gets home.
Granted, the availability of Nafisa Collier was a huge reason for it, but that was another one of these games, to your example, that just had massive line movement. You said to me in the break that you saw as low as 5.5 at one point. Now we're sitting at 11. That total also up and down. Saw an initial move to the under from 159.5 to 156.5. Now it's 158.5. You said you're going to the game, so are you rooting for points or not?
I mean, I would love to see points. I just think it's going to be more one-sided. I think the Washington Mystics side of ball, they're just too inconsistent at times, and they've got to figure out how to put together four good quarters of basketball where they can score. If you look at what they did in the Dallas Wings game, they got out to a hot start in the first quarter, and then they were struggling to even get to double digits in that second quarter against the Wings. So it's so many times like that where the Mystics offense is just very, very inconsistent. And with Brittany Sykes, who is a 20-point-per-game scorer, probably one of the players that should be in the discussion for most improved, but she and an all-star this year, honestly, her being questionable late adds to the injury report as well. I don't know if I just want to bank on the offense being good today if Sykes isn't able to go. So that's where I think that I'm going to split the total. I like Minnesota's team total to go over, but I like the Washington Mystics team total to go under here.
Terrell, Indiana and Seattle, you mentioned before popularity of Caitlin Clark. Obviously, you know, people are locked into watching Indiana Fever basketball. But I want to ask you, does that create a marketplace to where if you take the emotions and the fandom out of it, that is a better that you're able to take advantage of if you're looking at the line movement going one way or the other?
Absolutely. Trends don't lie, and the trends say it right here. Indiana has not covered their team total on the road yet this season. Not one time. They are 0-6 this season to their team total. The offense is not good on the road, and I don't want to play the finger game, but Steph White, I've never liked her offenses, even when she was the coach of Connecticut and the Connecticut Sun were going to semifinals in the playoffs. They could not score effectively, and that's why they never ultimately made it back to the finals and won the championship, and it's because the offense. And so just because Caitlin Clark is on that side of ball doesn't mean that the offense is just automatically going to put up a million points. They're a lot better at home when they have the home crowd behind them, and they have all the fans, and it's loud, and it's rocking in there. But when they get on the road, they just have not been consistent. They have a lot of turnovers, a lot of it due to Caitlin Clark, and the offense just does not look like itself. So this will be another situation where I see this total going up, and it probably should go up because I'm not a big fan of Indiana defensively right now. But I just don't know if they're going to be able to cover their team total. They haven't done it yet.
WNBA analyst for Betting Pros, Terrell Furman, joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line. We've talked about it before on the show. The Chicago Sky are brutal. 3-win team, dropped 6 of their last 7. Those losses by an average of 17.5 points per game. Their lone win in that time to the Connecticut Sun, who are even worse, just a 2-win team. So how much should we be willing to lay fading the Chicago Sky? At home tonight, they are getting 5. How much should we be willing to pay for the Sparks tonight? It's basically where I'm going.
I wouldn't want to pay anything for the Sparks tonight. You talk about how bad Chicago is. Have you seen what the Los Angeles Sparks look like this season? I understand Chicago's bad. They are. But the Los Angeles Sparks are, in my mind, worse because they have the talent to probably rival maybe the top 6 teams in the league, and yet they look like more like the bottom 3 teams in the league. They haven't been able to close in fourth quarters. They had a 25-12 fourth quarter against the Minnesota Lynx without Nafisa Collier last game, in which they were able to lose that game and not cover that game. There's no way I want to lay 5 points with a 4-10 team that's struggling in the second half of games. And I understand that the Chicago Sky have a lot of the same issues, but I just rather take the points there. It's a toilet bowl, and in a toilet bowl game, I just say take the points and hope for the best there. So I would say getting a 2-1 money line on anybody playing the Los Angeles Sparks is automatically interesting to me, just because I don't trust the Sparks at all.
How about, Terrell, I want to ask you about the Dream down in Dallas taking on the Wings. They're up to an 8.5-point favorite, nearly 9-point favorite in this one. How about Atlanta and Dallas tonight?
So the Atlanta Dream offense has been really, really good, and I just don't know what Dallas is supposed to do defensively to stop them. They're one of the worst 3 defenses in the league, giving up 90-plus points per game, and it's the dead last, actually, in terms of opponent's points per game. And then you have – all right, how do the Dream score their points? Well, it's very easy. They like to get the easy looks by the rim, and then they shoot a bunch of threes. Well, Dallas is last in opponent's three-point percentage, and they don't have anybody for rim protection with the amount of outs that they have with players playing overseas. So they are down bigs, and they don't have anybody to really get stops there. So I think that it's going to be a big game for the bigs here for Atlanta. Bree Jones, I like her over 12.5 points here. And then I think that they're going to be able to hit a bunch of three-point shots from Gray, Howard, Pow, all of that. So I like Atlanta's team total over in this game. Maybe the Dallas Wings find their offense and they're able to keep this game close and they find themselves fighting in the game. The Dream have played down the competition multiple times this season. But offensively, I know the Dream can score, so I'm going to just back their offense and fade a bad defense of the Wings, who have given up 4 of the last 5 games to the opponent's team total over.
Terrell, just 1 minute left with you here, but to shift gears to the NBA quickly, what was your reaction to the market move on Kevin Durant going to the Rockets? Do you think it was warranted for them to be such a short shot going into next year?
I like you, Ime. I really do. But as long as Fred VanVleet is starting point guard, I'm just going to assume that y'all are not going to be a real title contender. So I'm not buying it.
Okay. Good deal, buddy. Appreciate your time, as always. Have a great day. Enjoy the game.
Always. See y'all.
Terrell Furman, thanks, everybody, doing great work over there at Betting Pros. If you haven't already, make sure you check out both the WNBA and NBA gambling podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network, as well as the Fast Breaks Bets Pod. I asked the question mark about the Sparks because the last time they met, I think the Sparks won by like 13 or something. Granted, it was in LA and, a different part of the season before they had dropped so many games, but I just feel like they're the better team. Chicago's rough.
Yeah, I'm with you. Well, Chicago's bad. Yeah, I agree. So I'm with you, Stormy. You and I are we're on the same side in that one. Terrell was going against us. We're on the same side. Yes.
Yeah. Maybe I won't end up putting that one in the account, but I'm going to continue just the mentality of fading the Chicago Sky in my brain as we go forward this summer in the W. Let's take a timeout here on Money Moves. When we come back, Aaron Rodgers was speaking on the Pat McAfee show a moment ago, made an interesting declaration about his career. We'll get into that and more coming up next here on VSiN.
Yeah.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Time's running out. You can enter to win a free entry into the Circa Survivor or Circa Million contest, proxy service included, with $21 million in guaranteed prizes up for grabs. The deadline to enter is tomorrow, Wednesday, June 25th at 11:59 p.m. Eastern. Winners will be announced live this Friday on A Numbers Game with our guy Gil Alexander, and they'll get exclusive strategy access to Gil all season long. How cool is that? Go to winnercircleproxy.com/VSIN to enter now. That's winnercircleproxy.com/VSIN. And I mentioned off the top of the show that today here at Circa, the owner of this lovely property, Derek Stevens, has been doing the media rounds for the contests that are set to get underway. Coming up soon, September, the NFL season will be here before we know it, Mark. And with that in mind, just moments ago, Aaron Rodgers was making his regular appearance on the Pat McAfee Show, getting back into form ahead of the NFL season. He was answering a lot of questions about his future with the Steelers, including one about how much longer his career might go. Take a listen.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure this is it. You know, that's why we just did a one-year deal. Steelers didn't need to, you know, put any extra years on that or anything. So, you know, this was really about finishing with a lot of love and fun and peace for the career that I've had. I mean, I played 20 freaking years. You know, like, it's been a long run, and I've enjoyed it. And what better place to finish than in one of the cornerstone franchises of the NFL with Mike Tomlin and a great group of leadership and great guys in the city that, you know, expects you to win.
For our video audience watching ESPN, let's help our guy out fix the headroom there. But Mark, yeah. when you talk about Aaron Rodgers and the way that he ended his time in New York, I think that makes sense that he didn't want to retire and hang it up and go out on that note. And one more year in Pittsburgh, thinks he can have an opportunity to do something special. Do you think he can?
I think he can. I mean, but Stormy, I thought he could last year with the Jets.
Yeah.
I think he's put himself in a better position because I think the coaching staff last year, Robert Saleh, wasn't a particularly good head coach. The offensive line wasn't good, got hurt early on the season, and, you know, and looked a lot better as the season went along when he got a lot healthier, Stormy. So, I you know, talking to some NFL people that were interested in Rodgers during the course of the offseason outside of Pittsburgh, you know, they looked at the tape and thought that Rodgers could still throw it, right? This wasn't Roethlisberger at the end. It wasn't Drew Brees at the end. It wasn't Peyton Manning at the end, that there's still life left in the arm, that he, quote-unquote, could still spin it. So now he puts into a situation out in Pittsburgh where, you know, Mike Tomlin is great at squeezing the lemon, right? Mm-hmm. You know, they don't bottom out. You're not looking at, you know, potentially, even when they're bad, they still are average, right? So I think he's put himself in a situation. Here's where I'd push back on Rodgers a little bit in saying that this is it, where say if the Steelers go to the AFC championship game and they lose a heartbreaker, that's going to be it. Rodgers walking off the field. Say if he has a great year. And listen, you could look at last year and say Rodgers wasn't particularly great. I think he finished with 28 touchdown passes for the New York Jets, right? So he wasn't dreadful. Say if he has a really good year, that's going to be it for Aaron Rodgers. He has one more crack at it, potentially going to a Super Bowl. So, you know, the Steelers signed him to a one-year deal. I think that worked for Rodgers. I think it worked for the Steelers organization as well. They drafted Will Howard late in the NFL draft. We'll see if they can go out there and develop him. They've got Mason Rudolph, a guy very familiar with in that quarterback room. Do they have the long-term solution at the quarterback position in Pittsburgh? No, they don't. But I think Rodgers didn't want last season. I don't think Rodgers wanted the idea of the Jets saying thanks but no thanks. We're moving on. We don't want you, even though you wanted us. And the Jets made it perfectly clear for that being the last time that you heard from Aaron Rodgers. Now he lands in Pittsburgh. Can he have a good year this year? Yeah, I still think he can.
And to your point about his season numbers too, even when you look at the cumulative, it was a hard season for him and the team. He still had 18 touchdowns to just 4 picks the last 10 games of the year. So as he got healthier and got better and got more comfortable, those numbers improved dramatically. And so if he can kind of pick up where he left off and carry that over to Pittsburgh, I think it'll be a good thing for all parties involved. And Mark, you know better than anybody, spending time up in the New York area and hearing all of those press conferences and all of the times that he has spoken, Aaron Rodgers is very good choosing his words. And I think the fact that he said, I think this is going to be my last year kind of plays into what you're saying, that that doesn't necessarily mean it's permanent, mean that's the way that it's going to go. I mean, look at him back in the day with the COVID stuff. He said he's been immunized, or with him getting married now. I know there are questions about that, but he said, I've been married, not legally married. Like, what might that mean? I think that whole thing is hilarious, by the way. And I know that's a conversation for another show, but the fact that his family, who he doesn't even talk to, is coming out saying, we don't even believe that he's married. Nobody's seen this woman before after all the public stuff in the past. I find it hilarious personally.
I think it's, I mean, listen, can I get more pictures or videos? Well, no doubt. Roger's on the beach listening to his AirPods, playing with his dog. I mean, can I get more of that? I mean, that's what I want, right? Going into the surf, looking out at the abyss, thinking about life. I mean, like, Roger's is a story. You hit upon it. Like, you have to take everything that he says at times and kind of like meander your way through it, because everything has kind of a meaning to it. And he could talk about the peace and everything like that. I think he's an ultra competitive guy. This is a guy that last year talked about how much football meant to him in his life, right? It's his really love of his life is being able to compete in the National Football League. And I think he's couching this year. If it doesn't go well, he already told you it's his final year. If it really goes well, could you see Aaron Rodgers suiting it up one more year and trying to take another crack at a Vince Lombardi trophy? Yeah, I think that's well within the realm of possibility. And the fact that the Steelers don't have a long-term solution at the quarterback position, say if they're a playoff team this year, win a playoff round, get to the divisional round in the AFC, it means Rodgers is going to go out there and shut it down. I have a hard time believing that because I know he loves the sport.
Yeah, and as we've said from the top of this, like, I think that Aaron Rodgers is a good option for the Steelers right now. You think about kind of the quarterback purgatory they've been in since Big Ben was aging and about as mobile as a tree late in his career. Russ and Fields didn't work out, like, year after year, even when they try to have somebody, like, it just never pans out. Kenny Pickett, Trubisky, whatever it is. And I feel like for as good as the defense has been as well, the quarterback position is really what's kind of derailed things. So if he can limit the turnovers, which he's so famously done so many years in his career, I think that will be massive for the Steelers. Now, you mentioned the way that they succeed even in the years that they're not supposed to. Everybody knows the stat about Mike Tomlin and winning seasons. Their win total this year is set at 8.5. Obviously, they play in a very challenging division as well. Big picture for the Steelers this year, what do you think about that number and where they kind of stand as a potential playoff-type team?
Yeah, I would take the over at 8.5. I mean, Stormy, you mean to tell, like, who is sitting there? And you might hate Aaron Rodgers and everything that comes along with it. And I get that, you know, there's a lot that comes along with the individual, right? But I think you have to respect the talent of what he is as a quarterback. Let's look at it. Is he better than Russell Wilson at this stage of his career? He is. Is he better than Justin Fields at this stage of his career? Even though Fields is athletically gifted, he's not a great passer of the quarterback, a passer of the football. And we know that he can't go out there and throw the football accurately. So, you look at Rodgers, can he be better? Yes, I don't think there's any doubt. If I look at Mike Tomlin, do I think he's an unbelievable head coach? I do. Do I think he probably should have won more than one Super Bowl over the course of his coaching career? Yeah. Do I think the Steelers can go out there and win 9-10 games this year and get over 8.5? Yeah, because I think the offensive line's going to be a little bit better. I know they're going to be able to run it. I love DK Metcalf coming in. You know, I'm a big fan of Freiermuth at tight end. You know, I love the secondary and tertiary weapons when you're looking at the wide receiver position. And I know they got a defense, you know, and I know the defense can go out there and create turnovers and get after opposing quarterbacks. So it's a very difficult division when you're looking at the AFC North. I'm not going to tell you the Steelers are on the same level as the Baltimore Ravens. I'm not going to tell you that the Steelers offensively are on the same level as the Cincinnati Bengals. But there is a massive issue when you look at Cincinnati. I love Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase, and T. Higgins in Cincinnati. We do know this, Stormy. You looked at that Cincinnati defense a year ago. Yeah. They couldn't stop you or me from scoring touchdowns. So that's the issue when you look at the Bengals. So can the Steelers go out there and surpass that 8.5 win total? Yeah, I think they can. I think Rodgers is out to go out there and prove a lot of people wrong. The big key is he's got to stay healthy, and the Steelers offensive line's got to protect him.
And to your point about the Bengals too, their best player on that side of the ball, the sack leader in the NFL, Trey Hendrickson, going through a contract dispute. Their young rookie stud who they signed as well, in Shamar Stewart, they still haven't figured out a way to get that contract done. Although TJ Watt's dealing with a similar issue in Pittsburgh,
yeah.
But it seems like there's less contention with that one. A couple other quotes coming out of Rodgers on the McAfee show. Quote, I really want the mantle of leadership on offense, and I'm going to earn it every single day in training camp. I've played 20 years in this league and want to pass on that knowledge. Obviously, Mason Rudolph and Will Howard also in that quarterback room. And here's the big one. I'm going to give the Steelers everything I've got and empty the tank. So he's all in this year, and he gets to start the season in New York at MetLife Stadium as a 3-point road favorite. Doesn't get better than that. Okay, we're going to take another timeout here as we reset for hour two of the program. Lots of Major League Baseball on deck today. The dog days of summer are here, baby. We're going to be going all in on these slates every day. Don't go anywhere, guys. More Money Moves after this.